Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, one and all, to the NFL Draft Punk podcast. We are back after a brief hiatus. Two of the crew are still on parental leave. Pete is joining me as a duo tonight. Good evening, Pete.
Hi, Kev. How's it going? I've got no chance of being on paternity leave anytime soon, so I'll be around for the foreseeable.
Yeah, so same. No plans. The only plan I think would to be book myself in for an op, I think, and just absolutely guarantee and ensure it. Plenty to discuss tonight. We'll have a bit of a college roundup. Go through championship games. Quite like looking at what the expanded college football playoff would look like as well. I've got that all planned out in front of me. Heisman candidates being announced. Transfer portal opened on December the 5th, 6th. Draft announcements from underclassmen and a bit of a coach merry-go-round as well already. And the bowl games have been announced as well. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl is back. Let's go start off with the final four. Did you have any issues with the rankings?
No, I didn't. I think that was the right thing. Once USC got beat, I think that's the four that deserve to be in the final four. I still don't think TCU are one of the best four teams, but they deserve to be in the top four. That's how I see it. I don't think they'd beat Alabama. I don't think they'd beat USC. I don't think they'd beat Utah, if I'm honest. But the story, the narrative of being, they were inches away in overtime from winning that game, to then rob them from a playoff spot because of that would have been harsh. So I think the correct decision is that the most deserving teams are there.
The Alabama one was interesting because they did ask Nick Saban about it, of course. He had opinions around the two losses and the fact that they were very close losses. Didn't say much about his two wins against Texas that they should have lost, and his kind of their last gasp win against Texas A&M, which they also probably should have lost as well. Conveniently forgot them when you kind of putting your point forward around the games that you lost, but don't bother talking about the games that you won that were close as well. So. Just running through the championship games as well then. So Michigan destroyed Purdue. A lot of these kind of, I guess, were, you could see it coming, couldn't you? Georgia beat, in my opinion, an overrated LSU team. They showed promise at times, but were far too inconsistent. I guess Utah beating USC was the biggest surprise. Second year in a row. I can't remember the last time a Pac-12 champion went back to back, the sort of doggy dog nature of that conference.
Even the fact that Utah got in it, there's a weird set of results in the final week for them to be eligible to get into the championship game, and three or four results went their way, and then they get to the final and they win it against all odds, especially with Caleb Williams being the Heisman favorite. Yes, he got banged up, Caleb Williams, but they beat USC twice this season, so it's just the nature of Pac-12 football, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Clemson beat North Carolina. I really fancy just them. Might have been a slight upset there, but Clemson came out on top, made the change at QB. Cade Klubnik in for next season. Next season's obviously looking to be a real barnstorming QB class. We always say about how the next season's always going to be the better class. you should wait and see who's coming out next season. But next season really does look great with Williams, as you mentioned, Drake May at North Carolina, who come onto the transfer portal, but he has confirmed he is staying at North Carolina. Klubnik at Clemson, exciting times.
Yeah, that change really sparked that offense and sparked that team, because the defense was okay. It probably wasn't hitting the heights that we expected that defense to reach, given the talent that's on there. But that offense was really holding them back, wasn't it? And Klubnik coming in and being the difference. And so the ACC next year with May and Klubnik could be really explosive. I'm hoping May stays in college football for a few years and those two can have a real rivalry in that ACC, because it possibly has been lacking in recent years. I think Clemson dominating it. So those two going head-to-head for a couple of years, it'll be well worth it for the ACC.
Yep. We also, I think some of us fancied Kansas State actually beating TCU. It obviously went to overtime. It was the closest game out of all the kind of 10, including the G5 championship games. They kind of just run out of luck in the end, TCU. They're the kind of the college football version of the Minnesota Vikings, just constantly winning by small margins and rolls of dice just falling on the right side for them.
Yeah, there were so many fourth quarter comebacks. I think it was 7th fourth quarter comebacks in the regular season, and even this championship game, they needed a comeback in the fourth quarter as well, and a 2-point conversion. And so that Max Duggan runway was probably half a foot short, but they still had chances on third and fourth down to punch it in and couldn't get it in from 6 inches out. So that's credit to Kansas State for that one. But that's how close they were to having that perfect season. And Max Duggan, if he'd have got it in, would have capped off a real campaign for him, especially the season where he wasn't even the starter at the start of the year there as well. He came in during the first game. But yeah, they were really close. And I think just the look of those close games, the bounce of the ball, or that 6 inches short, didn't fall from this time.
Duggan seems to have been around for years as well. Kind of a lot of these super seniors with the COVID year not counting. He's kind of another one which he just, how long has he been there kind of thing.
Yeah.
G5, Sun Belt. We mentioned before recording how Coastal Carolina kind of snuck in with James Madison not kind of being allowed to compete with their first season from FCS to FBS football. Troy destroyed them. UTSA back-to-back years beat North Texas, who strangely fired their coach pre-conference championship game. I think they won 1-5 at some point and won the last six, or I guess somebody had already made their mind up. Toledo beat Ohio. That was the Bobcats, wasn't it? They beat them. Tulane got the New Year's Six Bowl as the highest G5 champion, beating UCF. UCF, of course, moving to the Big 12. And Fresno beat Boise. So we all had a little go at the start of the season, didn't we, about predicting the games. Yeah, we didn't do great. Just spoilers. None of us got Clemson beating North Carolina. Nobody had North Carolina in the final. Only me and Liam picked Clemson. Unsurprisingly, in the SEC, we all picked Georgia, Alabama. Some had Georgia, some had Alabama. Oh, I think Liam, how's he doing this year? He was the only one who picked Georgia. Michigan beats Purdue. No surprises. Nobody had Purdue and nobody had Michigan. Pete, you went for Ohio State versus Minnesota. What do you think happened there?
I think they were lucky with injuries. Tanner Morgan got injured. Ibrahim got injured. Altman Bell got injured. So otherwise, that definitely would have happened.
Definitely.
But that didn't affect the Ohio State side of it at all, though. That's the problem.
No. None of us had Kansas State or TCU. Ted and Liam were both pretty high on Texas. Not sure why. Liam got the right final for Pac-12, Utah, USC, but he picked USC. You also got the same. You got it right. Well done. Hooray. We got one.
I got one. Did I?
You did. Utah, USC.
Oh, I did. Yeah, you're right. I thought I picked Oregon. I was right.
No, I did. Tulane beating UCF. None of us had Tulane. We were all pretty high on Houston, whose season just kind of disappeared, didn't it? I think they lost in week four, and that was it. All of you went boring with Fresno Boise State, apart from me and Ted. We did all pick Fresno State to win it, however. Coastal, I had in the final. You had Troy in the final. Liam had Coastal in the final. Toledo, I think Ted got Toledo right. UTSA, they were Ted's big one from last year. You all got UTSA. I went UAB. Notre Dame is the highest this year. Well, at least we got something right. I want to know what the playoff would look like if it went to the 12 teams. So it's very different. Four highest ranked conference champions get the bye week. The rankings are thus from 1 to 12, Georgia, Michigan, Clemson, Utah, TCU, Ohio State, Alabama, Tennessee, Kansas State, USC, Penn State, Tulane. The games would be as follows. Kansas State at Tennessee, winner plays Georgia. Tulane at TCU, winner plays Utah. USC at Alabama, winner plays Michigan.
Ooh, that's a tasty one. The ones before were a bit underwhelming. And other previous weeks, I was reassessing my opinion on the 12-team playoff. This is making me think I'm right. But that's the corker of it.
Yeah, yes and no. The last one, Penn State at Ohio State, winner plays Clemson. Also not bad. It obviously puts a large importance on conference champs, which I think is a bad thing. But if you look at Michigan's path with compared to Ohio State's, I'd argue Michigan's is harder and they're seeded two. So
yeah, you've got to beat the best anyway to get there. So it's there's some games there which are okay games, but not enough for me to go like 12 is definitely the way forward to get those elite games every single time. There's some meh games in there.
Well, on the flip side, you said that the Ohio State Michigan game was of massive importance because essentially you lose and you're out of the college playoff. Well, that's not happened, Pete.
At the time, you thought it was. While watching it, you thought it was. that's the important bit of it. So during that game, it was like Ohio State, CJ Stroud, we need to turn this on. He needs to get a result here, or but he's not getting the Heisman, and Ohio State aren't getting the top four. That was the feeling while watching the game, just because USC going crap the bed. That's not a reflection of what the game was at the time.
Is that you? That's the get out, is it? Because it meant something at the time.
It did, yeah. It meant something at the time. Yes, it was brief, but it meant something at the time. It meant something to me, Kev.
A few relationships like that probably as well. Right, let's move on to the Heisman candidates. They've been announced. Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud, Max Duggan, and Stetson Bennett. Kind of struggle with Stetson Bennett a little there. It almost feels by default.
Yeah, it feels like a pat on the head. Well done. You've been okay. Well done. But the amount of talent he's got around him, and he's not elevating that team, is he? In any way, shape, or form. Until this time, 12 months ago, there was a question whether he was going to even be the starter in the championship game with the top JT Barrett starting. But so this year, he's been okay. He's not doing anything wrong. He's not cost his team, but I don't think he's elevating that team. And so I'm surprised he's in the running. To be fair,
if you look at his stats, 3.425. Passing yardage, 20 TDs, 6 interceptions. He's also rushed for 7 TDs. Bryce Young, who has been snubbed, 4,782 yard, 47 TDs, 6 interceptions with a 66 completion rate. Explain to me. Like you said, are Georgia won because of Bennett?
Yeah, there was.
They're not one in spite of him. I mean, I'm not going to say and take that away from him, but like you said, it's not there because of him.
Yeah, and I think, say, Bryce Young, there's games where Bryce Young, that Texas game springs to mind, doesn't it? And there's a few others where...
Tennessee game, yeah.
Yeah, Alabama won because of Bryce Young. He elevated that team because the offensive line was doing nothing. They were struggling to move the ball. The defense wasn't, was giving up yards as well. Bryce Young won them the game, a certain game. Tennessee and Texas are the two that, that spring to mind. So he's been brilliant, just at the fact that they lost close games, according to Nick Saban. So he'll enforce that as well. They've lost close games, and so it's harsh on Bryce Young. As a pure performance measure, Bryce Young has been better than Stetson Bennett. There's no doubt in my mind.
You could argue Michael Penix has as well.
Yeah, and I think
Hooker as well.
Hendon Hooker. Yeah,
which is a real shame.
Hendon Hooker has been better than Stetson Bennett as well. So Blake Corum, until he got injured as well, was elevating that Michigan team as well. So Donovan Edwards has come in and sort of carried on, but for the large part of the season, Blake Corum was that Michigan team.
I'm just trying to look at something to see if I can disprove this or not. So Bijan Robinson, do you consider him a big snub or not?
No, I don't consider him a snub. To be fair, top four for the Heisman running. No, I don't think it's, you can say Bijan Robinson is an exceptional talent. He's played really well, but without deserving to be in the top four for the Heisman. Liam might argue any differently about that.
But so hold on to that thought. Mark Ingram won the Heisman in 2009 for Alabama. 271 rushing attempts. 1,658 yards, 17 touchdowns, 300 receiving yards, or 334, three touchdowns. Bijan Robinson, 1,508 yards, 18 touchdowns on 258 carries. I've not got his yardage in front of me, but I think he's got six receiving TDs as well. It's not much difference.
Who else was in the running for that? Or was it just a down year? Was there anybody who's played to the level of Caleb Williams has?
Don't have that to hand.
Yeah. And again, Caleb Williams at times has been the difference in that USC team who've given up a lot of points on defense. And Caleb Williams at times he's looked sort of elite in the pocket. He's looked calm. He's looked composed. He's dragged that team up as well. And there's times where he's under pressure. And he's evading pressure. He's got the highlight worthy players, which seem to elevate people to sort of Heisman winning, where he's got those players where you go, how did he do that? As well as just being composed in the pocket and dragging that team to so many wins, despite that defense having some deficiencies on it.
Final one, Blake Corum as well. Do you think that's a product? I mean, they're definitely, I guess the fact that they won their toughest game of the season without him.
Yeah.
Is the nail in that coffin of why he's not there. But he certainly made a difference. But, you know, being our offensive line guru, he certainly benefits from that also.
Yeah, very much so. You saw that Ohio State game and the fourth quarter where Donovan Edwards is going through one touch for 75 and 80 yard touchdowns, and it's not until he gets to the safety where he's getting touched. He's running through big gaps, and but the same we said of Corum as well to an extent. So he's benefiting from that line, which I've not seen the Joe Moore shortlist, but I expect Michigan are going to be on it because they've got some special talent on there. So that is, Corum has put up numbers on a team that's in the playoffs, so they're in the national spotlight. So he might deserve some recognition, same as Bijan, I think. But I still think there's some two obvious ones ahead of them in the order anyway. So whoever's in third and fourth are there to make up the numbers anyway.
I'm trying to find that for you now, actually, while you were doing it. Georgia and Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. When you just sidestepping a bit, when you're looking into the draft, how difficult do you find it, giving sort of credence to how much a player has done and how much is down to the offensive line just bullying on smaller, less talented defensive line?
Yes, well, especially when it comes to running backs, I think it does play a factor, isn't it, who they're running behind. And like I say, what does the rest of that running back room do in the same situation? If one of them is running for 7 yards of carry and the rest are running for 3.8, then there might be something there. But like you say, when you see Donovan Edwards come in and bust off some really long runs and game-winning runs in the fourth quarter against elite opposition as well, there's a chance that they're both elite or the fact that they've got a lot of help up front. So it does have to factor it in. You do have to look at the whole situation around it as well and what the rest of that RB room's doing.
We mentioned Duggan's tremendous season this year. This is the epitome of putting a team on your back. That if you look at some of the TCU games this season, 3,300 yards, 30 TDs, 4 interceptions, and 404 rushing yards for 6 TDs as well. Do you see him troubling Williams, or do you just think that's that kind of big name with USC sticking on there? The glory of USC back to the glory days.
Yeah,
the Coliseum.
That plays into it, but I think Duggan is there on merit as well. And I'd say that the numbers for Duggan sort of hide the fact that yes, there's so many fourth quarter comebacks, and they say he's putting the game on his shoulders and winning against the odds. And like I say, he wasn't even the starter in the first game. Chandler Morris beat him out in training camp. And Duggan's coming out when Morris got injured during the first game.
Sliding doors.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, yeah, behind the doors, what was happening when he was named as the reserve, his attitude was first rate. He said what he's going to do, he's going to help Chandler Morris prepare. He'd been a 3-year starter, Max Duggan. So he could have been had a real chip on his shoulder, but apparently he helped Chandler Morris prepare the best as he could. He made sure he was ready to step in, and look what's happened. He was ready, he had the right attitude, and like I say, he's put that team back so many times. 7 wins from fourth quarter comebacks, and Duggan's a large part of that, isn't he? It would have been fitting for them to win that championship game with him taking the run and bursting through a few tackles and reaching just over the line. That would have been a fantastic win when the season for him. It would have been at that point. I might have had the feel-good story of Duggan over Williams at that point, just because it would have been a storybook ending for him. But I think Williams' play has just been that step above.
Yeah, and even in the final against Utah, he was, again, you want to see him putting a team on your back. He was kind of half the man almost with a hamstring injury, and he's still rolling around out there trying to make plays and doing as much as he can to get them over the line against a team that have last 2 years, really, 2 or 3 years since Kyle Whittingham, isn't it? The coach is there who's just got them playing really, really tough football. Just seems a formality to me. CJ Stroud won't get a look in either. And you can argue he's been without one of his strongest receivers. But also on the flip side, how many other teams have two receivers that good? It's fair enough to say, well, he's been without one of his receivers. It's like, so has everyone. If you compare it apples for apples of other teams, nobody else has that luxury. Everyone else is working with one decent receiver if they're lucky, type of thing, you know.
Yeah, so I think Stroud's done well. I wouldn't put that Michigan loss on him either. There's some great defensive play by Michigan, and some of the interceptions were unlucky. But again, he's surrounded by great talent, and he's making sure that he doesn't do anything wrong, and he's sort of elevating the talent as well to an extent, but not like Caleb Williams has.
It's kind of sting for him that he's never beaten, has he?
Yeah. So has he declared? Is Stroud declared?
No, haven't seen it yet. No.
I can't imagine he's going to go back. I can't imagine he's not going to declare.
Now, before we get on the declarations, transfer portal said this opened up. The estimation is there's going to be over 1,000 players in the transfer portal. Now, some of this you have to remember is players in, especially some of the group of 5 players. If they're entering their senior year and they're kind of dominating at that competition, they'll want to try and get into a Power 5 team, try and improve their draft stock. There are plenty of players over the years who's done that and moved on. You look at recently someone like, name's gone from my head.
give us a clue.
Russia, who was at Temple, and I wasn't a big Quincy Roche.
Yeah,
I wasn't massive on him, but he came from Temple, was like the AAC kind of defensive lineman of the year, and then came up to Florida State. Where was Roche go? Need the producer to pull it up. I felt as if that's Miami. There you go.
Yes, and it's with Jalen Williams, Jalen Phillips, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and just didn't really improve his stock, but that's the whole aim of moving up from that G5 to P5 type thing. Some of the other stuff is always interesting to see the QB merry-go-round. One of the big ones on there, I was just quite surprised, your tip for the ACC, North Carolina State's QB, Devin Leary.
That is a surprise. I don't know if it's got somewhere lined up already, but there's so many QBs. If you look at it, I can't remember it being like this last year, just the amount of talent in there. But Devin Leary, he's got, I expected him to take the leap this year, just gone and really sort of elevate that team, and never quite worked out. So I'm a bit surprised he's in the transfer portal, to be fair. But it's the amount of QBs, and DJ Clemson's in there. Spencer Sanders is the one I was shocked at.
Yes.
At Oklahoma State, he seemed to have been there for years. And I thought
he's only a fifth-year senior. I thought he might actually be a sixth-year senior with the COVID thing going on there. But I thought he was a lifer there, really.
Yeah, so him and Grim Mertz, has done not much for a couple of years now. Same as Keaton Slovis, another one who's been beat out of Pitt by Phil Jerkovic, isn't it? Has gone to Pitt as well. Yep. So Slovis has moved out of there. JT Daniels.
Again.
Hudson Card, from going to leaving Texas. And Cade McNamara has gone to Iowa, hasn't he, from Michigan. So that should elevate.
Explosive offense there.
Yeah, it's gone from barely alive to just... It's now got a bit of a pulse with Cade McNamara. It's still not great, I don't think, but there might be some signs of life. So just the amount of QB movement that's going to happen is astonishing, I think.
Virginia's Brennan Armstrong also, after quite an explosive season. Couple of players which also caught my eye. Oregon's largest ever highest ever recruit, linebacker Justin Flo, struggled with injuries. He has also put himself in the portal. Quite a few from Oregon. I wonder where DJ Uiagalelei will end up. Can't help thinking he's kind of heading Pac-12 way back. He's a West Coast kid. Kind of feeling like something might get the best out of him.
I don't know if UCLA... DRT's moving on, isn't he? So DJ in that offense, you can use his legs a bit more as well. And so DRT was never the most accurate anyway, so it's almost like for like. You might be able to get something out of him there, Chip Kelly. So I'd keep my eye out on that one.
I mean, he's got a rocket on his arm, so he's you know, there's that probably opens up a little bit more than what they've currently got, depending if and what Bo Nix does. Again, these people seem to have been around for years, but there's talk of him even staying. But I thought Oregon might be another place for him, for DJ to end up. Two cornerbacks, which I'm sure we've discussed on here a lot. North Carolina's cornerbacks, Storm Duck and Tony Grimes, two of the best DDB tandems. Both of them are now on the market as well, both leaving North Carolina, which, again, they're kind of on the up a little bit. But
that's a bit of a surprise. Unless they've got something lined up for this, there's been the championship game of a Power 5 conference, and they've got a QB who's going to make them compete next year as well and be relevant. So that's a bit of a surprise, yeah.
Ali Jennings, one of Ted's favourite, leaving Old Dominion. Again, you'd think he's hoping for a P5 move somewhere. Xavier Worthy, wide receiver, leaving Texas as well. An interesting one also, where we're getting on to under draft announcements as well. Jakeem Bell, tight end South Carolina has announced he's staying in school, but he's leaving South Carolina. So that's...
Yeah, I've made note of that as well, because like I said, he was underused, wasn't he? So is yeah. he? So he's in the transfer portal, isn't he? So yes. he's not declaring. So I think this year hasn't been great for him. He's been chronically underused there. He should be used a whole lot more for his skill set. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I think he can go somewhere and be an impact player for a big Power 5 team. So I'm looking forward to see where he goes, actually, and somewhere where they can maximise him and his athleticism. Because they were lining him up in the backfield and as a running back at times as well, South Carolina. So he's got some athleticism. He's got the ability to make plays. Just didn't use him enough.
H-back type, tight end role. I wonder, just the discussion point around if you've got this sixth-year senior capability, whether if you're going to be kind of a fifth, sixth round draft pick, whatever, are people staying in school for the NIL factor?
Yeah, I think the NIL stuff is making people stay in. There's no need to jump to get that sixth round draft money, is there? They can probably make that at college or something approaching more that. Yeah, so there's no real reason to jump. So I suspect that the underclassmen, there might be fewer underclassmen declaring. We'll see if that's the case, and NIL is making people stop in. Obviously, the big players are going to go.
Yeah, but we'll come on to them in a minute. Because if you're talking about sort of round one, two money, then that's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to those draft announcements then. Just go back first to the ones staying in. Maybe a couple of surprises. Mentioned Bo Nix, Jakeem Bell. Michael Penix going back. I think for a player of his talent, he needs another season where he's staying fit.
Yeah.
And I think he's kind of banking on that, I guess, because if he came out now, I think he'd go undrafted with his medical history, to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
And would be a priority UDFA. But he needs a season where he's fit, doesn't he?
Yeah, if he can stay fit for 2 years, two consecutive years, and have the level of performance, he'll turn a few more heads. At the minute, he'll probably be a high priority UDFA. He'll probably go for a large amount. We'd be like Carson Strong did in that way.
Right.
People are going to prepare to take a chance on what might be that hasn't panned out. But 2 years of fully fit Michael Penix, that'll really help him. I can understand that one.
Definitely. Couple of bigger names. Keishon Butte is staying at LSU currently as well, which is really interesting. And your favourite is heading back to Penn State, Awuga.
Yes.
Olufashanu.
Fashion. Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. I thought he'd come out. I think he'd been rising up draft boards and regularly now being a first rounder in mock drafts and the way people are talking about him just because of those traits and that small sample size. Like I said, when we did our mid-season mock draft, I think we had him mid-late first rounder. So that's probably where he's going to go now. But if he goes back another year, he could be top five, top 10. And I still believe that. I think he'll have competition for OT1 next year. More stern opposition for OT1 with Joe Alt from Notre Dame, who's looking fantastic at left tackle for the Fighting Irish. So there might be a bit more competition for OT1. I believe that I was called him Fashanu by mistake there. Fashanu would be OT1 in this class. I think he's tougher competition next year, but I still expect him to go top 10 next year. So it's good for college football fans. I can see why he's done it. But I think the sample size was so small and there's a bit of a projection there. But so another year under his belt and refine that technique. Top five, top 10, definitely.
Hopefully he'll learn how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, exactly.
Fashiony.
That's the one thing that's probably holding him back. That's certainly on my scouting report. Is the one thing that's dropping down, probably a grade or two.
I forgot to ask you a quiz question before we talk about the players that have announced. Power 5 team with the most transfer portal entries?
Colorado?
No, good thinking.
Stanford?
Alabama.
Oh, was
19 portal entries.
That's surprised. Exactly. You said, I know Javion Cohen, the starting guard, has entered the portal. He's started all the games from this year, most of the games this year for them. So that was a bit of a surprise. We don't know why, but he's getting game time for Alabama. You're pretty near the top of the tree at that point. I don't know why you'd want to move from there. So that is a bit of a surprise. Didn't realize there was that many. I thought it might be Colorado, seeing as though Prime's gone
we'll
in there.
To that. Yeah. His opening speech as well is great. Just quickly talk about Butte. We all kind of expected and hoped for more. This doesn't seem, again, a recent example of Chris Olave going back. Olave could have come out and still been a first round pick, and you still saw the quality. Olave just seemed to want to go back, I think, just to play with Wilson and Jackson Smith and Jibu and stuff. So I don't know whether I still see the same ascendancy for Butte as Olave, really.
Well, then you saw that run and the catch and the yards after the catch against Georgia, where he's making people miss, he's breaking tackles. That's the one we expected to see all season, and to have a glimpse of it in the championship games. Well, where was this for the previous 12 weeks? So I was kind of expecting him to enter the transfer portal, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah.
He still might, but because Garrett Nussmeier came in and started throwing the ball a whole lot more, didn't he, than what Jane Daniels did. So maybe it's that rapport with Nussmeier. If Nussmeier gets to start next year, that might be what's keeping Butte there. He might be able to actually have a quarterback he can trust and have that relationship with. That clearly wasn't there with Jane Daniels.
So players you've declared, I think the big one really is Anthony Richardson from Florida. Absolute physical freak. But you're talking a projection, aren't you, with him so far? You've seen him do some miraculous stuff, but we're talking about someone who's kind of like about 52-53% completion rate in college. People like Felipe Franks had a better all-round college career than Richardson. Tim Tebow had a better college career than Richardson.
Yeah,
none of these players did well in the NFL.
Yeah, that's the surprise for me. Was Richardson? I thought he might go back again.
It's that
small sample size of yes, and there's flashes there of what you want to see. And he's got a really big arm, and he's really athletic, and can break tackles, he can make things happen, and he's exciting. He'll get you on the edge of your seat. But like I say, there's been lots of college quarterbacks through that, and they haven't made the transition to the NFL, and it's a different game. So I thought he'd go back and work on his ability in the pocket and get that. Be more accurate, show that he can work within structure. That's what I expected to see. Still, I think that I probably would if I was a QB and I had a QB who was a year or two away from the end of his contract. I might take a risk on Anthony Richardson and pretty early on, if I'm honest, because the upside might be there because he could be special. But
well, that's the point, isn't it? How early? Because if he's coming out, he's clearly been told by the draft committee that you're going to be taken at X position, and he's been happy with that. Now, have they said you're going in round one? And is he going to go in round one? We talk about physical freak. This guy is like linebacker size, like middle linebacker size. It's essentially kind of Josh Allen type level athleticism, and he's an outlier. He's not something that you plan your future around work. This is the way to do it.
Yeah, and that's a bit. So that Richardson's going to go to the combine, he's going to have the pro days, he's going to wow people with his 40 times and his athleticism and his jumps. I've got no doubt about that. But that, like I say, with Josh Allen's the outlier. You can't bank on a player's development being like that, because there's hundreds of examples of it not panning out, and there's one example where it did work out. So I don't think I'd take someone like Will Levis or Anthony Richardson in the first round. I know that much.
Someone will,
though. So somebody will.
What happens?
I've got no doubt somebody will. And I'm, as a GM, I'd be quite happy for somebody else to take that risk, and I'll take a better known commodity, a lower risk prospect. I'll let somebody else take that chance and burn a first rounder.
Do you think Chris Ballard will take it?
You never know. You might just say, "Oh, sod it! Like, I've played it safe. I've played it safe for far too long. I'm getting fed up of that Kev Sayre having a go at me. I'm going for it. Oh, Anthony Richardson with my first pick. That's what he might do."
Brilliant. Jackson Smith and Jeeves, we mentioned him. He is also declared as well. I don't think that's a surprise at all. I wonder how much he's been hurt this season by the injuries, or whether you're just going to go off the back of what you've seen already, which is an impressive resume. I just don't know whether he's got enough of the wow factor to potentially drop into the second round. Taylor would be ever so upset, but I could see it happening. I genuinely can. I don't think any of the wide receivers at this point who are really going to make you, if you miss one, you're then going to start a run on them.
Yeah, that's right. This is looking at it now at this early stage, it looks like a weak wide receiver class, doesn't it? But somebody will take, there will be a handful of wide receivers going in the first round. And I can see Jackson Smith and Jeeba going in the first round, if I'm honest, by the back end of the first. I guess he might have, how much he was resting on his last season's tape and not wanting to get hurt. I understand why he's come out. I don't think he'd want to be second fiddle again 2 years in a row to Harrison at Ohio State. That's not a great look for him. But I can still see him going at the back end of the first, even though it's a weak wide receiver class. There's no one who's really separating themselves from the rest of the class who, like you say, if that's the one, if you want to need a wide receiver, you've got to go and get that one. There's no one in that standard, is there?
No, I don't think so. Where can you see some of these players going? I mean, is there anyone else? Just off the bat, the cornerback class looks really, really good. Christian Gonzalez has declared from Oregon. Jerry Porter, who is going to really wow, I think, athletically from Penn State. And Cam Smith, who we've mentioned, who looks really good, just a really good player from South Carolina.
Yeah, I could see all those going top 20.
Yeah.
Comfortably, top 15, top 20. Top 15 might be a bit rich, actually. Top 20, definitely, for those players. But it's almost players like that, because they are so good and they are such gifted athletes. And they've got the production on tape as well that, actually, if they're coming out as a redshirt senior, you sort of worry a bit more at that point. How come it's taken that long to get to that point? You want them coming out as underclassmen almost, because they're dominating at a young age and putting really great tape out there at a younger age. So I'd be more worried about sixth-year seniors as cornerback, if I'm honest.
Yep. Another favourite of yours, Osiris Torrance, also declared. Will Levis mentioned him. He has declared as well. Tyree Wilson declared. He actually got a Senior Bowl invite, assuming he is a redshirt junior. So that puts him in there as well. Another big one, Michael Mayer, Notre Dame tight end as well, which, again, are you willing to be taking a bet on him in the first round?
Yeah, I did in the mock draft, so yes, very much so.
Right, okay.
Game changer.
Obviously, with the end of the college regular season, bowl games have been announced, but the coach merry-go-round, what one of the vacancies do you see is like the big potential? Do you think the big one like Auburn, or do you see kind of something else around Louisville, Nebraska, some of those?
I think Auburn and the SEC, but it's so competitive in there, but that's going to attract some attention, isn't it? So if I was a coach and I was looking at the opportunities, I'd want to go SEC, if I'm perfectly honest. I know Matt Rule's gone to Nebraska on a long-term deal, 8 years, $74 million contract. That's a big investment that they've made. It also implies that they're expecting it to be a long haul, and they're not expecting any immediate results, you'd like to think.
What was the length of the Scott Frost contract they originally gave?
This
reminds me of the Simpsons episode where Marge says to Homer, "Have you not learned anything?" And he says, "Marge, my dear, I haven't learned a thing."
Yeah, it is scarily close to that. I can't remember the Scott Frost contract off the top of my head, but it was again, it was some similar investment that was supposed to be there for the long haul. But this implies that they're not expecting anything to be happening anytime soon. That is a really tough conference, isn't it? So no one's expecting Nebraska in year one or year two.
His previous USC and UCLA on their way.
Yeah, and so I think Matt Rule, where he was at Temple and Baylor, it was in year three, got them to the conference championship for the first time in a while. So it was year three where they were seeing results. That's a big ask in the Big Ten for Nebraska. So there's going to have to be some investment and in transfer portal and get that recruiting up. Because that's a tough conference to crack. You almost have to rely on other teams having down years at that point for that to happen. But they've made a big investment there in Matt Rule, which, again, is eerily similar to the investment in Scott Frost.
But he has at least got pedigree. Whereas, I know he's become a bit of a NFL punchline because it just didn't go well there. And it was for his rancid fashion sense with his trousers that didn't fit in that photo of all the NFL head coaches.
Yeah. So, and he's
but this is more suited to him.
This is where he should excel. It's in the college game. He's got a proven track record of taking teams and improving them in the long term, and that's what Nebraska seem to be preparing themselves for. Whether they get itchy feet at year three or year four, if they're not seeing the development that they want, then it's a different matter. But at this point, it seems that they're making the right decision and giving real time to develop that. And that they must be aware that they need it. They're not expecting year one or year two, I'd like to think, because they're in serious trouble at that point.
So obviously got Hugh Freeze left Liberty for Auburn. Some of the Auburn Twitter that day, well, they weren't happy, were they? This is a disgrace. We don't want this. If you want any history, I'm not going to go into Hugh Freeze's history. Just Google it, and then you'll see. I don't know. This is,
I think there was,
at the end of the day, if it's a disgrace, if everything that's going on in the professional game, and we're talking about this being a disgrace, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's if he gets in there, he starts winning, it won't be a disgrace. That's how it works, unfortunately.
Obviously, off the back of that, Liberty position was open, and Coastal Carolina's Jamie Chadwell has now gone to Liberty. I was really surprised by this. I thought he would be kind of next in line for a Power 5 job.
Yeah, I was expecting, if he's going to make the leap, and he was going to make the leap at some point, that Liberty wouldn't have been the choice. That there'd be somewhere, a Power 5 team would have been looking at the work he's done at Coastal, and the impact he's had, just being able to sustain it is an option for them there. But that's a strange one in my eyes, if I'm perfectly honest. I didn't see that one as a potential.
I mean, they've got a great setup there, but they're an interesting college in how they don't just stick to football. They're very outspoken around religion, around being forthright with a religion, and broadcasting the meaning of religion for you as an individual and for you as a member of their college, and also with political stuff as well. They're quite forefront around politics, where some people obviously say that sport and politics shouldn't mix. But I was kind of a bit surprised. I thought somewhere like Georgia Tech might be kind of somewhere where he could find a real living and bring some excitement in there. Liberty's also got some tremendous facilities as well, so they probably some of the best in the G5. Then we had that weird thing with the whole merry-go-round of essentially Wisconsin being available. Luke Fickell goes from Cincinnati to Wisconsin. Cincinnati then gets Scott Satterfield from Louisville, which has kind of done them a favour because they wanted rid of him anyway after he was in a job last season, and then said, yeah, I quite fancy that other job over there. And everyone was like, what? You're in a job? So then Louisville had a vacancy, and now Jeff Brom from Purdue has gone to Louisville. Makes sense for that. Out of all that, I like, we spoke before we recorded, we both actually liked the Jeff Brom one, didn't we, of what we actually think they can do with recruiting in Kentucky and offensively with that, with the ACC and Clemson coming a bit back towards the pack, that there's a real chance for competition there.
Yeah, and I think the work he's done at Purdue, and where he come to the championship final, played good football, Aidan O'Connell at quarterback, making some great explosive plays. He's got them exciting to watch for the first time in a while. And obviously, he's a former Louisville QB. He was an assistant coach there under Bobby Petrino. He's from the area, so again, that's going to help with recruiting. And I expect, I think out of all these hires there, like you mentioned there, Scott Satterfield and the like, I expect the Jeff Brom one to Louisville will have the biggest impact in the long term. I think that's a great hire for them.
And they've got a good helmet logo. The Cardinal is far more better and aggressive looking than the kind of dour looking one on the Arizona's helmet. What say you?
Yeah, exactly. That's why Brom went there as well. He said that pretty was much. a key factor for it.
Yeah, pretty much. David Shaw resigned. Is that an inverted comma, resigned from Stanford?
Yeah.
Winningest coach of all time.
Yeah. I think it's, do you want to resign? Otherwise, please open that envelope and read what's inside it. And I think you got the hint.
But then how committed are they to actually putting out a program that competes because of, you know, the academic stuff around getting in there? And
well, yeah, that's the thing, is it? Because they're competing with, it's a small pool. I think Notre Dame are in a sort of similar pool as well, and they're the ones who are getting the recruits currently. I suppose it has been cyclical in a way. Stanford have had success in the past, but at this point in time, those rules that they've got and the criteria that they need, Notre Dame really kicking their ass out of the recruiting at this point in time. They're the ones who are stealing all their players, essentially, who meet that criteria that Stanford have.
Okay, let's talk about it then. The final big one, the elephant in the room. Who saw this one coming then? Prime to Colorado.
I didn't see it coming, hands up. But I can see why he's gone. It's a group, it's a Power Five conference team who were at rock bottom. Colorado were awful this past year. They were absolutely terrible. So the only way is up. There's no chance of them getting any worse. And so what he's done there, I wasn't a big fan of the way he went in and spoke to the players and said, get your stuff. You're all in the portal. Get yourselves in there. I'm bringing my luggage with me. I think that's probably one-on-one conversation, if I'm honest.
He called them soft and called them basically quitters.
Yeah. I don't really like that.
At what point did he play on a team that were that bad, though?
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. Like, if you've played sport at any level and you're on a team that is losing, it's pretty hard to get up for it week in, week out.
Yeah. That rubbed me up the wrong way a little bit, if I'm perfectly honest. There's no way that he would watch each of their individual performances and gone, yep, you're out. Again, as we come back to the Simpsons reference, it's like Simpsons, like Homer, when he's cutting the players, yep, you're cut. And I didn't really like that, but I still think it's a surprise, even though the situation of Power Five conference only weighs up, I still didn't see that one coming at all. I'm not entirely sure why he's gone there. I thought he might have held out for something a bit more high profile.
Maybe he doesn't want that high profile. Maybe he sees that as somewhere where if he has moderate success, you can really look like a hero with it. You know, what he's done at Colorado?
Yeah, I expect that's the reason. It's a stepping stone for going, take some players with him who he knows are going to be able to compete, turn them around in 2 years' time, and then go on to the next challenge after that. That's what I expect is the reasoning for it.
Let's watch this space on some of the portal trackers on like the Athletic website or Pro Football Network.
I imagine that they'll attract a fair amount of high profile players. They'll punch above the weight with regards to the transfer portal, I expect.
Good stuff. Covered a lot of ground there, Pete. Bit of a whistle stop tour. The bowl games have all been announced. Surprise you with it. Anything that stands out? So I've chosen a game from each of the kind of 3 weeks, so we'll carry on doing our pick'ems into those like we do every year, where basically then all our pick'ems just become carnage. I've looked at BYSMU. I think that could be one of the better early games. I like either Arkansas versus Kansas or Texas Tech versus Ole Miss. And then obviously Georgia, Ohio State, with a special mention to Tulane. Come on, that's tremendous.
That yeah, I'll give that one. I'm just looking at Jim Hendon Hooker isn't available. So Tennessee versus Clemson could have been an absolute humdinger of a game. As it stands, it's not particularly great without Hendon.
I think
Hooker.
They'd have done him as well.
Yeah,
I really do.
That's the one that would have stood out to me as being the one I wanted to watch, but unfortunately, it's not. So whether I don't know if it's Anthony Richardson playing in the bowl game.
No,
is he not? I'm saying even them against Oregon State would have been might be an interesting one to watch, but that's going to be hit by those people who have declared not going to play. So yeah, it's there's a few almost good games in there. Penn State Utah might be in the Rose Bowl. That'll be for people who like trench warfare. That's going to be a good one to watch.
You then.
Me, I'll be absolutely yeah. that game, yeah.
So far, the Teddy's Teasers weekly pick'ems, which rolls into the bowl games, they did last year, right? I'm pretty sure they did the last year.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty sure bowl games count with double as well.
Did they?
No, they didn't. I really need to catch up, that's all I'm saying.
Liam Leeds, 49. Ted in second, 45. You, 43. You've had some stinkers last week. And me, languishing on 41. But this is it. This is where you catch up. This is where the... look at these early games. The Cure Bowl, Troy, UTSA. This is great. Frank Harris is coming back to UTSA. This is great. The Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl, Washington State, Fresno State. These are the games where we pick points.
It was the Louisville Cincinnati was the game, because obviously Satterfield has gone from one to the other, but he's not going to be on the sidelines.
No,
unfortunately, he's not going to be attending. And because I think at Fenway Park as well, both teams line up on the same sideline, so that would have been
yeah.
So it would have been absolutely great if he had been there. Would have been an interesting lineup there.
And I did mention it, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, San Jose State versus Eastern Michigan. That's the one to stay up for.
Yeah, that's a game worthy of the famous Idaho Potato Bowl as well.
Absolutely magic. Well, Pete, I think we've done all right as a twosome tonight.
Yep.
Good Smash stuff. It. No picks this week. Well, it's Army versus Navy game. Who you got?
Army.
Yep, same. I always go for them every year. How many passes over or under in the game?
We'll do it under 5. Is that what we're going with?
I'll say there'll be 8.
Pass heavy game, eh?
Ambitious, yeah, huge. Awesome stuff. We are now entering our time. This is entering draft season now. Teams are becoming eliminated. We'll perhaps go through some of the rosters for the Senior Bowl next week. Start looking at team needs. This is where we get into it, Pete. Exciting times.
It is, yeah. This is where it's what we do it for, really, the draft season now. So hopefully... Ted and Liam will join us as well soon.
I don't know what they're up to.
Yeah, they didn't actually give birth, so I'm not entirely sure why they're sitting out this one. Yeah.
Pathetic. Excellent stuff. Well, as always, thank you for listening. Join us next time. As always, we are on the clock.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.